This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. No primaries this week? No problem, as the candidates and their campaigns keep things interesting in the race for the presidency. And here to discuss the outlook for the five remaining candidates as we head into the next round of state primaries are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken and Howard, great to be talking to you this afternoon.
Good to be here.
I hate that I'm not there in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, we miss you. Yeah.
It's a little quieter here. We miss you, though.
Cleaner.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the high points every month for me, Ken, is when I hear your trivia question. So, what is it today? I mean, I'm waiting on pins and needles here.
Well, it's Ohio-related, and it's kind of in the weeds, but let's try it anyway.
Right.
Before John Boehner, who was the last Ohioan who served in either the House or Senate leadership? And that could mean Speaker, Majority Leader, Majority Whip, Minority Leader, Minority Whip. The last Ohioan before John Boehner to serve in that leadership in the House or Senate.
Wow. If you think you know the answer to that.
You're talking about Whip on up.
Yeah, any of the leadership positions.
Whip on up, right. Whip, Leader, Speaker.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So if you think you know the answer to that, call us at 513-419-7100, and the first correct answer will win a Political Junkie button. Ken, no primaries this week, but Wisconsin's coming up next week. That's going to be the big event, and it looks like Cruz is ahead in the polls. In fact, I think Marquette University, their poll had Cruz at 40, Trump at 30, Kasich at 21. Is this yet another one of those states where everybody's thinking Trump's going to be stopped in this one? This is where he stopped for good, because there seems to have been a lot of those so far, and yet Trump goes on.
Well, I don't know about stop for good, but you have to, in fairness, every time we think that there's an anti-Trump groundswell, Trump does very well. The last big batch of primaries, of course, was March 15th, and other than Ohio, which went for favorite son John Kasich, Donald Trump swept the other states. Now, some of them were close. He barely beat Ted Cruz in Missouri, but the fact is he won four of the five. So every time we think, okay, this is time he's getting stopped, he does very well. Having said that, there seems to be a growing momentum. Who knows what this means, but a growing momentum among Republican leaders. And we saw with Scott Walker's endorsement, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's endorsement this week of Ted Cruz, that there are more and more ads, more and more money being put into a stop Trump movement. Then either you stop him in Wisconsin, as you say, the Marquette University poll shows he could be stopped next Tuesday, or you stop him at the convention. That's one of the reasons why, maybe that's one of the reasons why Kasich refuses to get out, why Marco Rubio refuses to release his delegates, why Ted Cruz is getting more and more endorsements from people who probably don't even like him, but the fact is they like him certainly more than Donald Trump. So let's see what happens in Milwaukee, and then we'll recalculate after next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait and see on that. I mean, you're right, absolutely right about this movement of the Republican establishment and the money people, whoever they are, moving towards Cruz as an alternative, and they don't like him. I mean, they don't like him.
But then you have a Donald Trump who says something. You heard what he said yesterday on MSNBC.
Yeah.
He said women who have abortions should be subjected to some sort of punishment. Now, one of the things I heard suggested was that they have to listen to this program for an hour. That is punishment.
That would be punishment.
How do you say that? Whether you're pro-life or pro-choice or for abortion rights, against abortion rights, Donald Trump, who punishes women for deciding to have an abortion? This is anathema to everything anti-abortion forces believe in. And so, you know, every time you think, well, he crossed a line, this could be it. But this was a big one. I thought this was a big one, bigger than denigrating John McCain or anything like that.
Anybody who knows anything about the pro-life movement knows that it's not about punishing women, the women who have the abortions. And it's clear he doesn't understand that. And almost immediately he went back and started skinning back on that.
Well, I
hate to defend him, but he did say if it were illegal. He didn't just outright say
if it were illegal.
Right. He didn't just outright say women who have abortions should be punished.
But right.
he did say if it were illegal, and then
but
several
even
hours
if it
later,
were illegal.
Yeah, it's still
pro-life
it's not
people
it's not,
would not
you're right.
be about punishing women.
You're correct about that, Howard.
And you could, I mean, you could make the case that the pro-choice community says that restricting women's abortion reproductive rights is punishing women. It's in itself,
well,
but
it
clearly what he said yesterday just alienated both sides.
And then he had to skin back almost immediately.
Which he never does.
Which, yeah, he never does. He never admits he's wrong.
No, because he's not wrong.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, what does that tell you about how this thing is maybe changing?
It tells you, it tells us that there are Republicans who say that one of Mitt Romney's strongest bastions of support in 2012 were married women, and there are more and more numbers that showing that women are deserting Donald Trump in droves. And the last poll I saw had Hillary Clinton up among women 55 to 35. That's pretty remarkable, although not so remarkable. I mean, look, Hillary Clinton's a woman, and there's obviously a kinship there, but even the Democrats versus Republicans on women, this is a much larger margin than we've seen in recent, I can't remember the last time we've seen a Republican that under the, doing so poorly among women in that kind of poll.
So he clearly understood almost immediately that he had made a serious
or somebody
mistake
told him.
Of judgment. Yeah. Or somebody told him.
And remember, that follows the fact that his campaign manager was arrested for a battery charge in whatever he may have done or touched or pushed aside
a woman.
A Breitbart reporter.
Right.
You know, it's just those kind of things. If you add that, and there's a commercial going up by this anti-Trump pack that just basically recites all the things Trump has said about women over the years, that they're pigs, they're slobs, that blood running from wherever with Megyn Kelly, look at the face of Carly Fiorina. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And
are you talking about the one that has women?
Yes.
Reciting these Donald Trump lines. That one I've seen several times, and that is very effective.
And it's being played on the airwaves nonstop in Wisconsin as well.
Right.
Well, sure. that whole conversation he had with Chris Matthews it didn't go well because Matthews kept peppering with questions. And even when they got to talking about nuclear weapons, his whole answer came out sideways as to whether he thought they were appropriate things to use, and he it just didn't look good for him.
Hasn't ruled out using nuclear weapons against ISIS. Where do you use a nuclear weapon against ISIS? Where?
Well, the question: what about Europe? Right. And he said, "I haven't ruled that out."
Aim it at?
Right. And you know something, which is even more important than Chris Matthews, because I will never ever defend anything Chris Matthews says or does, because I mean Chris Matthews badgering Donald Trump is almost surreal in my life. But there was a Charlie Sykes interview, who's a conservative radio commentator in Milwaukee, who did an amazing interview with Trump the other day. Now most people, when either network TV or cable TV, they kind of do kid gloves. Not always kid gloves, but they don't really dismiss Donald Trump in the interview, because they want him to come back, and he does, and he does, and he does. But this Charlie Sykes interview, you should listen to it on YouTube. It's just that he just demolishes, and it just shows the lack of specifics and lack of conservative positions that Donald Trump says he has. It's just pretty remarkable.
But again, you have to ask the question, how much is this really going to affect Trump and his level of support?
It is a fair question. We've said this all along, because as his negatives go up, he still keeps winning, and his support does not go down. Now, it may stay steady at maybe 38% to 40%, which is not great, but of course it's better than anybody else. And if the alternative is Ted Cruz, maybe people say, well, Donald Trump is the guy who can make things happen. So who knows? But I've never seen this much of a concentrated opposition to Trump. It seems to be getting more and more urgent each week. And again, Wisconsin may not be the be-all, end-all, but let's see what happens on Tuesday.
Yeah, it must be, seeing all this support from people like Scott Walker and some of the establishment types and the money people going over to Ted Cruz. This must be driving John Kasich out of his mind because, He has portrayed himself as the grown-up in the room, the guy who's not, fighting about personal things like each other's wives or, you know.
Yes, but in fairness, there have been 30 primaries and caucuses so far.
Oh, yeah.
And John Kasich has added, he's won, let's see how many count, let's see. He's won one.
They all,
I mean, he won Ohio.
Each state that he has won begins with an O and ends with an O.
That's right.
And is high in the middle.
So I was listening to an interview with John Kasich, and somebody asked him the question about the Romney rule. From 2012, that what was it? You have to have at least 8 wins to even qualify. Was that
yes?
Yeah,
to get a name put in nomination, right?
Yeah,
I suspect that if the non-Trump Republicans have any control of some of the committee, the Rules Committee at the convention, I suspect that rule will be tossed. And in fairness, I mean, look, I know I'm sitting here badgering Donald Trump, but in fairness. Trump is playing by the rules. His people are voting for him.
Yeah.
And if he walks into a Cleveland convention with 1,237 delegates, he should be the nominee, absolutely. And if there is a movement at the convention to change the rules at the last minute, they tried to do that against McGovern in 72, but the Humphrey forces tried to change the rules to keep McGovern from winning the nomination in Miami Beach in 72. If they do that against Trump in Cleveland, well, I mean, Trump may be, it may be hyperbole when he said that there'll be riots at the convention, but there will be a lot of disgruntled and angry Trump supporters who, at the minimum, would sit home in November. At the maximum, could do some interesting things in Cleveland.
Ken, can I get you to give the trivia question again and see if we can get some people on the line to answer this?
Which, I'm trying not to make it so confusing, but John Boehner, of course, former Speaker of the House from Ohio. Before John Boehner, if you look at the Senate and the House, in all the leadership positions, Speaker, Majority Leader or Whip, Minority Leader or Whip, who was the last Ohioan who served in any of those positions before John Boehner?
Who served in either the House or Senate leadership?
Right.
Okay.
And the majority or the minority?
513-419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that question. And the first correct answer will win a political junkie button. 513-419-7100. Ken, you have any thoughts on what happens? Cruz wins Wisconsin, and in the meantime, Kasich passes Trump in Wisconsin. Any thoughts on what that might create?
No, because I mean, I think Kasich also finished second in Utah. There are some states where just the opposition to Trump is so large that he will finish third or below. Of course, now a third is the number of, is the bottom on the Republican side after once having 17 candidates. But then let's see what happens, you know, coming up. Donald Trump is from New York, and New York primary is on April 19th. And on the week after that, you have Pennsylvania and Rhode Island and Maryland. What's funny about this whole race, and this is definitely true on the Democratic side with Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton as well, because to think of what happened on March 15th, when Hillary Clinton won all 5 primaries that day, including Ohio, and the headlines were, it's all over, time for Bernie Sanders to get out. And then since then, Bernie Sanders, like last Saturday, he swept the caucuses in the West and Alaska and Washington and Hawaii. He won Idaho big. Right. He won Utah big. And then they say he's back again. So,
and he keeps raising big wads of money, too.
He's raising big wads of money, too. So, you know, for the thought of Hillary Clinton scaring him out of the race, that doesn't seem to be happening. But, again, Bernie Sanders, like Ted Cruz, could very well win Wisconsin. He does very good, English. I speak English very good. No, he does very well in states with large liberal and white constituencies. Aside from Milwaukee, Wisconsin is a very white state. It should be very good for Bernie Sanders. But again, then you come into New York and Pennsylvania with high amounts of African-American voters, Latino voters.
Yes.
And then all these good things we're saying about Bernie Sanders could be changed. I mean, you know, I could see the headlines after Wisconsin great day for stopping Cruz. I'm sorry, stopping Trump. Great day for stopping Clinton. And then 2 weeks later, that whole scenario
whole
and that
gone.
Could be gone, right?
Yep. Can you explain this? I've been hearing about this strategy that Bernie Sanders has of wooing superdelegates. Can you explain what he's doing here, Ken?
Well, yes, exactly. What he's doing, he's telling superdelegates, look, I won 62% of the vote in New Hampshire, and yet the superdelegates back Hillary Clinton. I won 80% of the vote in Utah, and yet there's a Democratic superdelegate who's backing Hillary Clinton. He's almost trying to shame these superdelegates into saying, I said, look, if I'm winning the votes, if I'm winning the votes of the people you're representing, how could you go against them by supporting Hillary Clinton? Now, of course, the reason they have superdelegates is because they don't want, I mean, the idea is they don't want a McGovern slash loser to take over the nomination. They want some adults in the room, but that really alienates Sanders supporters, saying it's being taken away from us. I mean, you know, you have all these. I mean, Hillary Clinton has 1,712 delegates. 489 of them are superdelegates who don't owe their loyalty to anyone except their own conscience, and that really angers the Sanders crowd.
And as much as Bernie Sanders tries, I don't think you can shame these people, really. You know, these superdelegates. They don't seem to have a whole lot of shame.
But they did shame. There was some movement in 2008 when a lot of the superdelegates came out early for Hillary Clinton. I think John Lewis of Georgia were among them because nobody told Obama.
You're right about that.
And then as Obama started to win, people said, there could be something going on here, and they changed their mind. I don't see them changing their mind this time.
I don't
But it's
either.
The same strategy.
Yeah.
We've got some folks who are starting to line up to answer the trivia question.
It's about time. It's 3:30.
It's a tough question. Let's see if we can get a few more people on the line here. So, Ken, can you give that question again for us?
Before John Boehner, the last Ohioan who served in the leadership in the House or Senate?
Okay, leadership position, House and Senate. And again, that could be a Speaker, Majority Leader, Minority Leader, right. Yeah, that's a tough question. But even if you just want to take a wild guess, give us a call here, 513-419-7100. I mean, the stakes are great here. You could win a political junkie button. So
or a steak.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or a steak from Ken. No, don't say that, right?
I'm in Howard. And Howard, you know who the answer is not, right?
Huh?
You know who the answer is not.
Yes, correct? I know who the answer is not.
It is not Frank Lauschen.
I know it is not, yes.
Okay.
I'm with you there.
Speaking of Hillary Clinton and New York, you know, Howard and I were talking about this earlier. You know, she served there as a U.S. senator. Yeah. She doesn't seem to be in any danger of losing to Sanders in New York. Yet she's campaigning there, and she's spending a lot of money on ads that are attacking Trump, a fellow New Yorker.
Well, she just softening him up for the general election campaign, I would suppose.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Well, she is running she's torn between, she desperately wants to run a general election campaign. She wants it to be right now a United Democratic Party against Donald Trump. But as long as Bernie Sanders is still winning, and if he wins in Wisconsin, that you'll see the more headlines again saying that Bernie Sanders has a shot, and he does have a shot. But he's going to have to win. I mean, if he has to win 60%, 58-60% of the remaining delegates, well, that doesn't happen. He doesn't win that big. Maybe some of the Western caucuses he wins big, but he's going to have to do like stuff like that in New York and Pennsylvania and the upcoming big states if he's going to make it close.
So what's she doing in New York?
She's trying to. She realized. Look, that's the next contest after Wisconsin. She may feel that
19th.
She's done all she can in Wisconsin. She's not going to win it. She doesn't think she's going to win it, and just make sure she piles up the numbers in New York. And that's why she was campaigning in Harlem this week, which of course the African American community adores her, and they have in every primary and caucus we've seen so far.
And she's also, you know, they're spending a lot of money on ads attacking Trump.
They are, but they're also, you know, they're also, it's very interesting. There's also a debate behind the scenes about the debate. Uh-huh. And the fact is that Bernie Sanders says he was promised more debates with Hillary Clinton. And the Clinton campaign is now saying, well, Bernie's really being negative to us. And I think he's violating his pledge. And therefore, we may not, you know, we may or may not have a debate. I mean, whoever had a debate contingent on whether somebody was nice to them or not. So I suspect there will be a debate. Bernie desperately wants it before the New York primary on the 19th. Clinton campaign is not guaranteeing that.
Yeah, I have to wonder, too, Ken. Al Jazeera America was reporting that the FBI has finished its exam of Hillary Clinton's emails and will soon interview her and decide whether to file criminal charges. So I'm wondering where all this is headed and what kind of impact this is going to have.
I think if you ask Democrats, for the most part, they will say they are not concerned. They're not worried about whatever, one about a possible indictment. But there are some who just know that. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, the Republicans are behind all these stories. They are not. The FBI is investigating. The media are investigating. So it's not just a Republican plot. In my heart of hearts, yeah. I can't imagine the Obama Justice Department indicting Hillary Clinton for whatever reason. This close into an election, but the fact that those questions are still out there do get Democrats quite nervous.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, especially if Donald Trump becomes a nominee.
Let's see. We've got some people who are lined up to try the trivia question here, Ken. So let's go ahead and let's talk with Steve and Milford. And Steve, who do you think what's the answer that you want to give here?
I'm guessing John Kasich.
John Kasich was chairman of the House Budget Committee, but he wasn't in the leadership we were talking about, minority leader or majority leader in the House. It's not John Kasich.
Okay. Let's see if David and Anderson knows the answer. Hi, David.
Hey there.
Who do you think it was?
Nicholas Longworth, Speaker of the House, maybe.
Nicholas Longworth is a great guess, but you don't have to go back that far.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. David wants to try his hand at this. David, who do you think it was? David, are you still with us?
I don't know.
Okay. David, one more try here. Are you there? Nope. Let's see. Michael.
The silent majority. David's with the silent majority.
Let's see. Let's try Michael here. Michael, who do you think it was?
Yeah, I'm on. I might want to make this comment first. When Ken was saying, obviously Chris Matthews isn't his favorite interviewer, but to me, what Matthews was able to do is he rattled Trump. Matthews has been in Washington a long time. He used to be an assistant to Tip O'Neill. And he's been in a lot more of these back-and-forth debates than Trump. And I think Trump was just exposed as not having the brain power.
Well, he peppered him. He kept firing questions at him pretty relentlessly.
Oh, he rattled him. There's no doubt about that.
I agree with Michael completely.
I think he rattled Trump. But that shows you what you're dealing with in that man's experience. Anyway, my guess is, and which would repeat the answer to last week, I think, is the elder Robert Taft, Senator Taft.
Well, I don't know why I would do the same answer 2 weeks in a 2 months in a row, but you are correct. Wait, guys, there are not that many people listening to the program. Would you stop that fake applause? But Michael is correct. Robert Taft, sadly, it was briefly because the Republicans won the Senate in 1952. Robert Taft became the majority leader of the Senate in 1953. But sadly, he died later that year of cancer. But Robert Taft was the last Ohioan before John Boehner to be in the leadership. That's correct.
Michael, stay on the line so that we can get your information on where to send your prizing. And congratulations, Michael. Good job.
Very good, Michael.
Coming up, we'll continue talking politics with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson, and we'll take your phone calls at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon, and you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Howard, I have to stick up for you. I know you did.
Yes,
I know
you had
it. Yeah, yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, he did, Ken.
Robert A. Taft. Robert Alfonso Taft, Mr.
Republican.
That's
good. I'm happy Howard got it, but I'm concerned that Carol Hughes is the only person listening to WVXU. That's it?
No, she likes it a lot. Though.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. But Howard, and I did not tell him the answer either. Ken. Howard got that legitimately. I saw him write it down, and I said, daggone it, he got it.
But yeah. Wouldn't you think with all the leadership and the interesting right. characters you've had in Ohio over the decades, there you have to go back to 1953 for the last
leadership. Find the last yeah. one. Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I had thought of a few other guys that might have been, but then, you know, when it came down to it, I couldn't specifically remember that they had been in leadership positions. Been chairs of committees and that sort of thing.
And James Traficant was the heir apparent, but he didn't yeah. seem to.
Now bad. That he's gone, Steve Shabbat has taken over. That
heir apparent. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken and Howard.
Can I interrupt?
Sure.
I didn't get a chance to say this on the air because you don't give me enough airtime. No, I'm kidding. But last month, when I loved being with you guys in Cincinnati and VXU, it was so much fun. The station is so unbelievable. They're so good to everybody, but they're so good to me. And we had these great moments visiting high schools in the area in Cincinnati and talking to students who love politics, love journalism. I am so thankful for that experience of being with Howard and I going around the city. It was just great. Thanks to the people at VXU for making it happen.
Well, it was great having you here. And really, you know, the visits we made, to the students, I thought were just tremendous.
It was great, yeah.
You know, these kids were as smart as can possibly be and asked great questions.
They did.
And then we got to do the show together.
Yep.
In the studio.
Naked.
Right.
Oh, why did I say
we're
that?
Not naked
why did you say that?
Why would I ruin everything I just said with that one word? Why do I do that?
Okay, everybody, focus. Back on track.
Sorry.
All right. You can still come back if you want
Frank
to.
Lashy. Frank
yeah,
Lashy.
We enjoyed Frank having Lashy. You. You know, Ken, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz have been having this war over their wives. And I just wonder if either you or Howard ever remember a presidential campaign where it just got so personal and the passions ran as high as they have in this one.
I do remember. Do you remember, it was not too many years ago, but when Andrew Shepard was president of the United States,
yes.
and he criticized yeah. his opponent for making fun of his girlfriend. Do you remember that?
Yes. I understand what you're saying.
In other words, never.
Of course, this was in the American President.
That was a movie. It was a movie. American President.
It was a movie.
Did you hear Cruz? He was using some of the very lines
exactly.
that Michael Douglas
exactly
as the president was using in the movie. I mean, word for word.
I know, it was basically exactly.
I mean, it was hysterical. I was watching they put the two of them together, and he was repeating every line that Michael Douglas had said in the movie.
I mean, I remember when Harry Truman was really upset and indignant when you criticized his daughter's singing, I think it was, or something like
that.
Right. But or sometimes when a politician feels that any kind of focus on their children is out of bounds, and it usually is out of bounds. But the thought of posting a photograph, a glamorous photograph of your wife, and then alongside an unflattering picture of your opponent's wife, is this not fifth grade? It's just beyond.
It's absolutely.
Is it even fifth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're insulting fifth grade. Is exactly
right.
Well, and then Pete Reitmeier, the producer, is pointing out the Nixon "Leave my little dog Checkers alone." The whole Checkers speech.
Yeah.
So I guess things have gotten personal in the past. So. I just in my lifetime, I don't remember anything quite like this, though.
No, but especially when it goes, again, we're back to the subject of women, which is the Achilles heel of Donald Trump. And yet to throw out unflattering pictures of not only Carly Fiorina and Megyn Kelly. I mean, he puts up pictures of Megyn Kelly when Megyn Kelly was modeling or something like that, because he thinks that's getting back. And I just.
And then. He must look at the poll numbers and what the poll numbers are among women.
But he tells everybody, he said, but I'm winning. I'm winning every debate. I'm beating Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, and did you, I thought it was interesting too that Cruz was joking with Jimmy Kimmel the other night that he would consider running over Donald Trump with his car if he got the chance. And even though it's a joke, you can't get a lot more personal than this.
No, see, I have trouble with that.
Why are people
that?
Talking about these things? Yeah. I mean, why are they talking like this? This is the presidency of the United States that we're talking about here. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. And Charles in Blue Ash joins us now. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
The question I have is the platform 530 in progress? For instance, as an example, there's three bills in the current Senate, two in the House, and the last state will be revised. And especially the
okay, Charles, you're
in a little trouble.
Yeah, we're having a little trouble hearing you on our end. So I guess your question is, you're talking about party platforms and what's going on right now behind the scenes as far as shaping the party platforms?
Yes, is this better?
Yeah, that's better. So
the issue is, Warren's not endorsing anybody, but the question is, there's someone like herself who's involved in the Glass-Steagall revival, there's three bills in the Congress. And on the Republican side, you have this resistance by, say, the Freedom Caucus against the Republican budget resolution that just came out last month. And I'm wondering if those fights are already going on right now before the convention actually starts.
Okay.
What I understand is that the Rules Committee, the Credentials Committee, they don't exist yet. I think they're appointed later because I think there are a lot appointed by. I mean, I think as being Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan will be the chairman of the convention. But there are a lot of people, for example, there are a lot of people who have been officers and chairpersons of committees in the past that have either come out for Trump or against Trump, and thus they will be vetoed by the opposite side. So I don't think those committees exist yet. But if I understand what Charles is asking, I suspect that when they do begin to be formed and when they do begin to meet, I mean, they can become very heated. I think the first rules or credentials meeting I've ever been to was in 1988, and it was mostly between the Dukakis and Jesse Jackson forces. And while they were ostensibly on the same side, there were serious differences between them, but yes, it certainly doesn't compare to what's going on today.
No, yeah, Ken's absolutely right. The committees aren't formed yet, but when they are, and when they get to, say, Cleveland or even Philadelphia, for that matter, there could be some fights.
And you see that right now with Bernie Sanders with his argument against superdelegates.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've been around since '84 and the Mondale campaign, but that's a big bone of contention in the Democratic Party right now, the role of the superdelegates and whether they can decide in a nomination.
Well, even in the interview I heard with Kasich where they were talking about the Romney rule, that, you know, hey, Governor Kasich, you haven't won anywhere near 8 states. His comment was, well, the rules can be changed.
Right. And that drives Trump supporters insane. He said, look, we've been following the rules and you're going to change it at the last minute at the convention. So expect some insanity going on to go on in Cleveland.
And if they do change the rules, it's not going to be pretty.
No.
Again, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And let's talk with Malcolm in Mount Adams. Hi, Malcolm.
Hi there. One of the first things when Trump started all this stuff that came to my mind was Berlusconi in Italy. Do you guys think that there is any sort of
Silvio
parallel?
Berlusconi, yeah.
Well, the thing about Berlusconi, I mean, that was more of his private life. I don't know everything about Berlusconi. I know, of course, that he was rumored or allegedly hired a prostitute to accompany him. And, of course, in Europe, that kind of behavior is just kind of ignored. I mean, for many countries in Europe, it's personal business and not to be public. But Trump's positions about other women and what he says about other women, I don't remember Berlusconi going that far that callous. I don't remember that.
Berlusconi, I mean, it was a matter of his personal conduct. You know, it wasn't a matter of what he said about women in general or specific women.
513-419-7100 to join us. It is something about that says to me, Ken, just how bitter things have gotten. It sounds like among the GOP candidates, the pledge to support the eventual nominee is starting to go by the wayside.
It's gone.
Yeah,
it's gone.
Even though, as Howard will point out, nobody will directly say that. But it just seems to show that this has just become very acrimonious and very bitter.
Well, actually, the person who has basically said it is Trump, because first Cruz said, well, I can't imagine ever supporting a candidate who has these things to say about my wife. And then when he was pressed, well, would you still back Trump? He says, well, Trump won't be the nominee. Right. And then Kasich basically said the same thing, that, you know, this ugliness and pettiness makes it tougher for me to back the nominee. But at the CNN town hall meeting this week, Donald Trump says, no, I am no longer pledging to back the nominee. And you know something? I don't know what's worse for the Republican Party, that Donald Trump is the nominee or he's denied the nomination and then heads up a third party candidacy, which he could very well do. Either way, it's just bad news for the Republican Party, I suspect.
Yeah. Well, and now that this pledge is fallen off the tracks, I mean, does this mean that it's more likely Trump's going to run as a third party candidate?
Well, if he's denied the nomination, I mean, he said they're treating him unfairly, and he says he points to Louisiana where he won the primary, but Cruz got more delegates. Well, we saw that in 1912. We saw that in 2012 as well, when, I mean, Romney would win a bunch of primaries, and Ron Paul forces, because of state conventions and whatever they would do, would get more delegates than they were originally allotted. So that's the game of winning the nomination. But he says that, you know, it would be wrong, it would be cheating if I come in the convention with less than 1,237 delegates and I'm denied the nomination. Well, that's like saying, well, if I don't have 270 electoral votes, but I come close, I should be president. It doesn't work that way. Horseshoes, maybe, but not in campaigns, right?
No, it's a fixed set of, I mean, it's 1,237 delegates or nothing.
Right.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson, and we'll take your phone calls at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking politics this afternoon with political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Bob in Madeira joins us now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was struck by the similarity I see in the public personas of Donald Trump and former Toronto Mayor Rob Ford. With Trump, it seems every time he opens his mouth, you wonder what this guy is on. And, well, with Ford, we knew what he was on. On a serious note, these guys seem to maybe share a similar demographic that supported them. I'd be interested in you guys' comments.
Okay, thanks for the call, Bob. We appreciate it. What do you think of that comparison between Donald Trump and Rob Ford?
Well, in all due respect to Rob Ford, who passed away. But I mean, he had a very tragic life, and I can't say that Donald Trump has had a tragic life at all.
No.
I think they did speak to a dissatisfied silent majority out there, but I think even more so than Rob Ford, because I don't think there was such great unhappiness among the Ford supporters about what was going on with the leadership in Canada. Trump and his supporters have tuned into this dissatisfaction, deserve it or not, about the way that Barack Obama has been leading the country in foreign policy and you know, the change in social policy with same-sex marriage and abortion rules and things like that. So I think there's just a dissatisfaction, or maybe it's even a longing for a time that is long past, but they feel that they're ignored and they're being left out of the equation of the conversation, and they feel that Trump will bring back, you know, not only make America great again, but bring us back to when things were really great, like, you know, 1066 or something like that.
Yeah.
It's
also dissatisfaction with the Republican leadership in Congress, too.
Absolutely.
So, but you're saying that everybody.
The similarity is the fact that their supporters say, hey, these guys are saying things that I'm thinking and wouldn't dare say.
They are both outrageous, that's for sure. That's for sure. You know, one thing I'd like to, two things I'd like to talk about before the, we run out of time. One, I want to know if Carol Hughes is still listening. And two, I'm fixated about Carol Hughes. But Merrick Garland, the nominee, President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, and of course the Democrats think they have a winning issue there, that the Republicans are refusing to even acknowledge his existence, let alone call for, let alone meet with him, let alone have hearings, confirmation hearings. But you're seeing a few Republicans breaking away from Mitch McConnell's edict that no vote, no nothing this year, wait for the next election. Jerry Moran of Kansas, a conservative Republican, Mark Kirk of Illinois, who's in a tough battle for re-election.
Really
more Susan Collins of Maine. More and more Republicans are saying that, look, at the minimum, this guy is an eminent jurist and deserves a hearing. You could vote him down, but let's give him, look, they gave Robert Bork a hearing, and he was not going to win the confirmation hearing. But they gave him the hearing. Why not give Merrick Garland the same consideration?
Well, you know, I mean, Mitch McConnell set the tone for this. I mean, almost immediately after Justice Scalia passed away, you know, by just saying, oh, no, we're not going to consider anybody. We're not going to talk to him. We're not going to hold hearings. We're not going to vote. And he, you know, threw down the gauntlet right then and there. And I don't know that this is not going to backfire on Republicans who, you know, people like, I mean, I can understand somebody like Mark Kirk, who was in a really tough fight, you know, bucking Mitch McConnell on this. And you've got some Republican senators are saying, oh, well, we'd be willing to meet with Judge Garland, but we don't want to take a vote. And Rob Portman of Ohio is among that group. And, you know, he's also in a tough reelection battle. And I think possibly they're jeopardizing their Republican majority with this thing.
I do too. Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire, right. Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. They don't want to buck their leadership, but at the same time, they know the constituents are just be fair now. Of course, a lot of Republicans point to what Joe Biden said in 2000, saying, "Hey, we shouldn't have vote on a Bush Supreme Court nominee in the middle of an election year." Now, Biden says he was misquoted or misunderstood. Both sides have played this game, but I think it's not great for democracy. And you saw a big vote this week in the Supreme Court that tied 4-4 that helped the liberals because there was no fifth vote. But I still think that Merrick Garland is probably the best nominee the Republicans will get by any Democrat. And I suspect that if Garland disappears and Hillary Clinton wins, the Republicans will be wishing that Merrick Garland was still on the table.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if I were Mitch McConnell, I might be quietly saying to some of these senators who are vulnerable, look, I know what I said, and I know what I said in public, but, you know, you guys need to get reelected, and maybe you should just do whatever you need to do.
I suspect that conversation really has happened. I agree with you, Howard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
513-419-7100. Jackson in Moscow joins us now. Hi, Jackson.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
Well, my question is about Trump and the potential nomination. I wanted to see if you gentlemen would play some odds on the chances he would get the nomination if he got in the, let's say, 45% to 49% range of the delegates. And then really, even if he were to get into the 51%, I know that the rules are written now that the clinch, but you were talking earlier about views of the delegates and the leadership. You know, what are the chances that some rules would be changed, you know, before that convention? And the folks who are going for Cruz these days, the leaders, the would-be delegates, do they really, are they willing to give up on a Kasich potential or a more moderate leader? Or is the Cruz thing just their desperate thing to definitely stop Trump first and then figure out who the nominee should be?
I love this question. I love. Can I just jump at it quickly? I'll try to not take up too much time. One, if Trump comes into Cleveland with more than 1,237 delegates, he is the nominee. They're not going to. They're not going to change the rules that way at all.
Right.
I think the reason there are a lot of these people who are backing Cruz now is because he's the guy who's close to Trump in the number of delegates. I mean, Trump has 736, Cruz has 463, Kasich has 143. Why not back Cruz, because he's the closest guy to keep Trump from going over the top. But once, if Trump goes into the convention without a majority, and then the first ballot comes and nobody clinches it, then I suspect you'll have more people looking at Kasich or somebody, or I mean, whoever, somebody who they're going to look at the polls, show that Trump is losing overwhelmingly to Hillary Clinton. I suspect Ted Cruz is not doing so well in the polls against Hillary Clinton either. Then they may look at somebody like Kasich or somebody who theoretically could win. But right now, the love affair with Ted Cruz is really more about stopping Trump from going over the top in Cleveland when the convention starts.
And if they did stop Trump, brought him up short of 1,237 and did broker some sort of a nomination for Kasich or a Cruz, there's, as we said before, there's a potential price to be paid for that, too.
Absolutely. The Trump supporters are Trump. Brags about all the new people he's brought into politics. They're not going to go along with saying, okay, we voted, we worked our hearts out for Donald Trump, and now you're going to take it from us at the convention. So I mean, either way, it's going to be a very tough and bitter convention for Republicans, and something you haven't seen in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with Jerry in Union, Kentucky. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I'm afraid my question is somewhat similar to the previous caller, but I've been really stunned that as candidates have dropped out of the Republican primary race, that they have thrown their support to Ted Cruz rather than John Kasich. I realize that, Cruz has more delegates, but if the Republicans truly want to get back to the center of their party, it seems like Kasich is the logical person that could lead that party back to that. And I'm wondering if you have any other comments. It almost seems like there's something about Kasich that they know that we don't know. Thanks.
Thank you, Jerry.
Well, I love the fact that everybody's talking about John Kasich as soft and cuddly. I mean, you guys know it better than I do, but
right.
I mean, he doesn't have a reputation for being soft and cuddly, although he does during this campaign. But what Jerry said is exactly right. I think the reason they're going for Cruz right now is because he is the vehicle to, you're not going to stop Trump with John Kasich right now. You're going to stop him with Cruz and then maybe go for a winner at Cleveland. But right now, backing to endorse John Kasich, who's won only Ohio, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to them. And so a lot of these endorsements from Jeb Bush and others of Ted Cruz, it's really holding their nose and endorsing him, but I think that's part of the calculation.
The only thing Kasich's got to say for himself, or would have to say for himself if he went into Cleveland to try to make that argument, is, oh, look at these polls. These polls say that I beat Hillary Clinton by 10, 11 percentage points.
I've heard him make that argument several times.
Yeah, he does. He does it almost daily now. But, you know, that's now. And, you know, if he got into a general election campaign, they would start spending a whole lot of money to bloody him up.
Ken and Howard, thank you so much for joining me today.
We need to do this every week, okay?
It goes too fast. We always run out of time.
You know, I was never fond of the WVXU leadership. I come in, they have to. Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
Okay, I'm game.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson.